Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up, former Major League closer Jenson Lewis, VSiN by the books, will join us. We will do baseball. It'll be an all-baseball show here as, you know, the World Cup behind us, football not quite here, although we will do plenty of football here in the coming weeks, in the coming months. But we'll get Jensen's thoughts, trade deadline, the red-hot Red Sox. What an incredible story that is. Futures, awards, and I've got some thoughts on both of these here. Before we get to Jensen, but you know, I've been mentioning these three teams, and I feel like I'm a broken record talking about the American League. It's watered down. It's wide open. Yankees have issues. Rays and Mariners are not great. Mariners certainly, you know, not a team that inspires a ton of confidence. Texas, you keep waiting for them to come. I keep mentioning the three teams, and you know, the prices on the Red Sox have obviously plummeted, you know, with you getting a shorter payout in the last week or two since I mentioned it. But I keep mentioning the Red Sox, the Orioles, and the Tigers as just teams that are lurking, and the Red Sox are more than lurking now. And now, you know, according to some of these projections, a much better than 50-50 chance of making the playoffs with their just, again, incredible run. But the Orioles, the Tigers, and the Red Sox, to how they're sleepers, wouldn't be shocked if one or two of those teams, you know, makes a run. And I finally just kind of acted upon it and looked. FanDuel, and both DraftKings and FanDuel actually have it. Odds to make the ALCS, if you want to get really clever and really go for a long shot, you know, you pick both AL participants. Now you worry they don't play each other early on. You worry they're not on the same side of the bracket because that could sabotage these bets. But, I mean, that's you're certainly getting a price. And if you want to wheel a few of these longer shots, I know people have suggested the White Sox too, which is, hey, take a shot on longer odds. Anything can happen. Orioles versus Red Sox in the ALCS is 125-1. Orioles versus Tigers in the ALCS is 200-1. And Red Sox Tigers ALCS is 80-1. It's in FanDuel, American League, name the finalists. To me, those are fun ones. And again, choose your fighter, choose what team you like, choose your couple teams you like here, and just take a shot, because anything other than the Yankees, Mariners, I know the Mariners have pitching, but these teams down the board to me have value. So again, Orioles, Red Sox, 125-1, Orioles, Tigers, 200, and Red Sox, Tigers, 80-1. And who knows, maybe you get lucky with one of those. They're long shots for a reason, but with, you know, some dangerous teams here, and it looks like Skubal probably stays with the Tigers. Red Sox, you wouldn't think, are going to be sellers barring some, you know, epic collapse between now and the deadline. Orioles have come on strong here. You throw that in, you throw a few bucks on it, and I don't think that's, you know, a bad one. Bad ones to have in the account. I think those are good ones that you might be able to run into one there at a long, long number. The other thing I'm looking at, as we're a couple weeks away from the deadline, who knows who's going to be traded? Doesn't sound like Skubal. Mason Miller, very possible. I don't know that Lindor gets traded. You know, I made the point. I know Hal Steinbrenner's not going to do it. Mets and Yankees don't usually do big trades with each other. He would fit perfectly on the Yankees. I know the Yankees are never going to eat that contract because they're so money conscious now, and they're just all about the budget. But you add Mason Miller and Lindor to this Yankee team, suddenly a lot of their problems, not all of them, but a lot of their problems go away pretty quickly. And I think if you put Lindor on a good team, you know he can handle New York. Boy, Lindor would be a perfect Yankee. But and that's something in the late 90s, early 2000s, they would definitely do. And they would just add these older stars with bloated contracts and just say, hey, we'll eat the bad years of the contract. We want to win. That's a guy that could help you win, but don't know that's going to happen. But the thing that's interesting to me, and I noticed this Sunday night when the Yankees-Dodgers played the second game of the doubleheader, Ohtani is not going to pitch for a while, it sounds like. And why do you need him to pitch? You're trying to win in October. This is basically, for the Dodgers, 162-game preseason. His at-bats did not look great Sunday night. Then he went 0-for-4 Monday. I'm recording before the game on Tuesday if we have one. I know there's a lot of rain in the forecast. He was sort of reaching for the ball, waving at the ball. I wonder, first off, he's not going to pitch for a while. I wonder if they just shelf him, put him on the IL for a couple weeks and say, hey, there's no reason, if you're dealing with a bad knee, let's not let this linger. Let's not let this get worse. Let's put him on the IL. Let's get him healthy. That opens up the MVP race. And I've always been somebody who shuts down any idea of somebody that's not Ohtani to win the award, just because I'm like, hey, you're overthinking it. You're being contrarian just to be contrarian. You're going for a plus price. I get it. But with what he does on the mound and what he does to the plate, it's just impossible for him not to win barring injury. Well, injury appears to be here, at least from the pitching perspective, and it's affecting him at the plate. Ohtani -600 to win. The field is +400, which is interesting. Pete Crow Armstrong is also +400. Why would you bet Crow Armstrong +400 when you can have Crow Armstrong and everybody else in the National League at +400? Schwarber's 30-1. Soto's 40-1. His numbers are great, but I don't think he would win. on a bad team, I just that seems like a stretch. Who knows? At 40-1, okay, I get it. I'm not looking to bet it. James Wood at 50-1, he's got tremendous numbers. I mean, you're not going to be. It's probably not going to be a playoff team, but I mean, is it possible? I don't know. I actually like the field at plus 400. I just think there's enough runway, and Ohtani's won this award so many times. Would there be an appetite to give it to someone else if they A, shut him down on the mound and really just put him on the IL for an extended period of time? It would become a resume where it's like, all right, he pitched for half of the year, he pitched really well, and then what he did at the plate was good, but could somebody top that resume? I'm not sure, but I think at plus 400 for the field, where you're getting everybody else, you are getting a 4-1 plus price. I don't think that's the worst bet. I really don't. So those American League, ALCS exactas, I think are interesting. The field versus Ohtani, I actually, I don't know, you missed the best price. I think you could have gotten, you know, 8, 9, 10 to 1 in recent weeks, but it wasn't as clear that he was this hurt weeks ago. So you got to play the ball where it lies. And if you told me right now, hey, I got the field at plus 400, I think there's enough uncertainty with the Ohtani injury and him being a non-factor on the mound and his at-bats looking shaky. And there's just the Dodgers' MO of, hey, let's get ready for October. They've done that in past years with Snell, with Glasnow. They have an eye towards the fall, which they should. I wonder if that drips into, leaks into their philosophy with Ohtani, and they shut him down for a little bit. So I think those are interesting here as we get ready for the deadline. The deadline's always fun. Again, I don't know how many big names are moving. Probably not Skubal. I think Miller sounds like 50-50. It's tough because you gave up a lot for him, and you feel like you're taking a loss if you're the Padres, if you don't get that much back. I know they gave up DeVries, who was a top prospect, and Young. But where are you going? Does it make sense for a team like that to have an unbelievable closer? You just kind of cut your losses and get some prospect equity back. We'll see. That'll make for an interesting story at the deadline. You'll get some of these, you know, Michael Walkers of the world. You get some fringe starters. And it's something we've talked about too. There's just not that many sellers. Mets, Rockies, Giants, Royals, A's, Angels. You got six teams to choose from. Everyone other than that is kind of sniffing around the playoffs. Will the Blue Jays eventually drift and become sellers? Will you get some scenarios where teams that are contenders deal with each other? Like, all right, you need a pitcher, we need a batter. Remember the Yankees did that a few years ago. They traded Jordan Montgomery, which was a surprising move, and he went to the Cardinals. The Yankees got Bader back, and both teams were playoff teams that year. It was just, hey, we need a pitcher, you need a bat, and we'll do business that way. You could see some of those moves, but it's tough when there's just not that many sellers. It makes for a more complicated deadline. Lindor will be an interesting one. I don't think, and I've mentioned this, I'll ask Jensen Lewis about this. Would you think about, you probably wouldn't, and there's a million reasons why it wouldn't happen. Would you think about saying, you know what, Soto, going to be 28 by the end of the World Series here, by the end of the baseball season. Who knows if we have baseball next year? Who knows if this is his real age? There's always whispers about these players that aren't from America and their real age. You know these contracts age poorly. We wanted him for the front half of the deal. We're already going to be 2 years into that. Who knows about baseball next year? Now, the owner's got so much money, he probably doesn't think about it. But I wonder if he would start to entertain the idea of trading Soto. He probably, here's the problem. If somebody's going to eat that contract, they're probably not going to give you prospects back. So that probably kills it. But it was something that crossed my mind, and I'll ask Jensen about that. Coming up, I'll get his thoughts. Trade deadline, the Red Sox, plenty to discuss. It is a baseball show. We'll do more baseball with Jensen when we return. Should have been more podcast. All right, we're back. Should have bet more podcast, former major league closer, VSiN by the books. He joins us now. It is Jensen Lewis. Jensen, appreciate you coming on, man. A couple weeks to the trade deadline. I would imagine as a former player, this was a stressful, anxiety-ridden time. Was that what it was like when you were pitching? And I appreciate you coming on. Good to see you.
Always good to be with you, buddy. I'll go from my first couple of years, because it was probably two of the blockbuster trades that at least my Indians team was a part of. Of course, 2008, when CC Sabathia was traded, I think right as we got off the plane, coming off a road trip. And he obviously goes to Milwaukee. It's the storied run, pitching like every third day, and single-handedly put them into the playoffs. The following year, Will, it was 2009, and we ended up trading Cliff Lee to the Phillies that would bring us back a haul, including Carlos Carrasco, who was the top player in that draft. And I was actually in AAA at the time. We had heard the deal was made just shortly after 4 o'clock. I think all of us had come in from playing catch, and we were in Lehigh Valley, which is the AAA affiliate for the Phillies. And basically Cookie packed up his bag, walked across the hallway and had his locker in our spot there on the visitor's side within a couple of hours. So one of the weird parts of the deadline, we ended up losing Victor Martinez that year. We traded him to get Justin Masterson from the Red Sox. So Wow. Yeah, I definitely have had experience with it, and not like small moves here, Will. I mean, you're talking franchise, you know, changing pieces that were obviously huge additions there in 08 and 09.
Wow, Masterson, that's a name I haven't heard of for a while. He was good. He had a little funky delivery. I think he made a couple all-star teams. And we'll get to some betting stuff here in a second. I don't want to cheat, without looking, CC got traded for when he went to Milwaukee. Was it Laporta? Was it Matt Laporta? Is that a name I'm remembering correctly? That kid from Florida? I'm trying to think of the package that went in that deal.
He was the headliner. We had history. Of course, he was at the University of Florida. I was at Vanderbilt. There's a great video out there, if you can find it, that he hit a homer off me in that series when we were in Nashville. And, you know, wouldn't you know it, a handful of years later, we end up being teammates there via the trade. He was the headliner. If you remember, Michael Brantley was the player to be named later.
Yes.
And that was due to the finish records, I believe, for Milwaukee and what pool of players Cleveland would be able to pick from. And I mean, how crazy is that, Will, that it works out where the player to be named later ends up being not only the best player acquired, but for the longest tenure, and certainly was a franchise changer for us in Cleveland as well.
I feel like Laporta, without looking again, I feel like he battled injuries a lot and just could never stay on the field. And Brantley was the same way. Brantley was a really good professional, just like classic hitter. He was hurt a lot too, though, but Brantley could really, really hit.
Yeah, he and I were roommates in spring training for a couple of years, also on the road in AAA, of course, when he came over. And I always tried to room with a position player or with a starting pitcher, just because you knew the regimen, Will, and certainly with a starting pitcher, you knew the day you were throwing, you knew the routine. On a position player side, I didn't feel, you know, awkward coming back at night, because it wasn't like I was rooting against a bullpen teammate. Again, when you're looking at the difference between getting called up from AAA to the big leagues, you're competing against your other bullpen mates there. So it is a little awkward work environment when you're in that situation. But boy, Dr. Smooth, as good as it gets, man, just nice and even keel, one of the great swings, and one of the guys that, you know, was such a fabulous teammate. You mentioned the injury issues, thinking about him in 2016 when he couldn't be part of that magical run into the World Series. It really was something that, had we had him, who knows what would have happened with the Indians there, obviously losing to the Cubs there in Game 7.
So when you're in the minors and you're in the bullpen, you're not pitching, somebody else goes into pitch, are you just flat out rooting for offense?
It stinks, right? Because it's a gift and a curse. If that player doesn't do well, that obviously raises your stock when you're looking at statistics. And that, and to be fair, that's not the only thing, you know, that the front office is looking for. For me, in those rare instances where I had to go back and forth, I was on the 40-man roster. Some of those other bullpen guys may not have been, Will. And for people that don't know how it works, it's easier for the front office to just option guys back and forth, and the rules have changed, you know, here 10, 15 years later. But yeah, it's weird, because you'll have guys that are your best buds. I mean, you spend a lot of time together, especially in the bullpen, and in such an incredibly difficult balance of not only being a good teammate, but when someone doesn't do well and you do, then it really is tough to manage in such a cutthroat environment.
All right, let's before we get to some possible trade candidates, I texted you guys in the group chat, 52, 53 home runs hit on Monday night. Is that something? Is that nothing? Is that the balls? Is that the time of the year, the weather? What do you make of all the home runs we saw on Monday night here?
Yeah, it could be a perfect storm, but Will, we are seeing reports out there, and I think you even mentioned it in our group text of seeing maybe if the balls are juiced a little bit. Offense is up here to start the second half. And, you know, you get that little breather in the All-Star break for the majority of the league. And those guys that really need it, position player wise, tend to benefit in the short term. Now, let's see if that kind of continues. We are getting into the days of summer here, in the dog days, and we get to the high humidity, a lot of the elevated temperatures in the heartland. But I would say, too, look at average fastball velocity again. You know, Will, it continues to creep up. And so we pitchers tend to supply a bit more of the power. You're not asking guys to have to do too much more to lift and be able to have that carry. So, yeah, I think it's a combination of things. But, boy, if you're playing unders, I've been burned a handful of times already, and we'll definitely be picking my spots moving forward.
The biggest name to be traded at the deadline will be what? I think we're past the point where Skubal's probably going to be traded. I would think that's unlikely. Maybe you disagree. Mason Miller, is it Lindor? Give me your thoughts here, big picture, on a swing piece that moves.
Yeah, so the Tigers and Skubal are my chaos candidate 1A, and the Padres and Mason Miller are 1B. And a lot of that predicated here, Will, on what do the records as far as the deficits, are they a couple of games back? Are we a week out of a playoff spot? I really feel this goes up until the 11th hour, and the parity in both the American League and National League wildcard race would probably bear that out. I think front offices would be doing themselves a disservice if they don't give the maximum amount of runway. These deals can be consummated quickly because, well, they've had conversations probably since the middle of May. Most front offices start to take stock of what the market could bear for their biggest of names. And everyone listens on everyone. That doesn't mean that those players are going to be moved. But you want to establish what market value is. The biggest name, prisoner of the moment today, had he pitched better in Milwaukee, I think Freddie Peralta would have been in that conversation because everyone is looking for starting pitching. A lot of expiring contracts are ones that front offices are comfortable getting. I would throw Robbie Ray in there. That would be a candidate from the Giants to be one of the biggest names. Should Skubal stay? Should Mason Miller not get moved? I would say that's probably between on the starting pitching side, Peralta and Robbie Ray. The other one I'd throw in there is Kevin Gausman because it is a unique situation for Toronto. I think they're going to have to make up their mind about this offense, and it doesn't feel like it's anywhere close to what it was with the pennant winners last year. I don't think they have enough time to really get this thing right. So those would be the big three pitching names as far as starters go. Position player wise, you know, Houston is staying in this thing. And Christian Walker, we're looking for right-handed power, whether it be a corner infielder, you know, an outfielder. I would feel that Taylor Ward would have been someone from Baltimore, but Baltimore all of a sudden is catching fire. Spencer Steer, if the Reds continue to kind of bow out, which it looks the way that it's going right now, I think he's a name from a right-handed bat and a middle-of-the-order bat that could be acquirable. Man, outside of that, it is really hard to see, unless the Mets take on a significant amount of salary, that Francisco Lindor would get moved. And I'll give you the caveat. If Carlos Beltran becomes the manager of the New York Mets, he is the perfect intermediary to kind of get those two superstars and Soto and Lindor together and be like, guys, you're at the pinnacle of the sport. You're two of the best to do it. And if you continue to go against each other, we're getting nowhere. So I would say that if they can't get it right, let's say that Beltran's going to be the guy at the end of the year, then I would look at Lindor as a trade candidate at the winter meetings more so than I would here before the deadline, because if they can get it right, then I think they keep him. There's going to have to be an amount of salary that Steve Cohen's comfortable with eating for an acquiring team to want to make that move, knowing what the prospect haul would be as well.
Yeah, and it'll never happen. I actually think Steve Cohen would do it. If George Steinbrenner was alive, he would take on the salary. Lindor would fit perfect on the Yankees. I mean,
sure,
you could
would.
Yankees got plenty of issues right now, but if you gave up whatever you could for Mason Miller and you add Lindor and you just say, you know what, I'll eat the contract, Lindor and Mason Miller, all of a sudden, a lot of your problems go away. Yankees, Hal's not going to eat the contract. He's not George. He doesn't want to pay the money. And look, I get you probably don't want to be on the hook for that contract going forward, but it's also been a long time without hanging a banner. And sometimes, you know what, you got to give something to get something, even if it's money in a contract you don't want to eat. What you mentioned Soto and Lindor. So we all hear, you know, they don't get along, these issues. And it's hard for people that know, and you have more sources than, you know, anyone listening or me. Is that stuff real? Because sometimes you listen to that and say it's overblown. It's not overblown. Where do you think the root is and how real is that stuff?
The fact that we're hearing it a lot, like multiple different times and multiple different places, that's hard to get away from to believe that it's just kind of a flash in the pan. So I think you now have to make a decision if you're Steve Cohen and David Stearns of you paid Soto all the money that you did. And not that, you know, there's a cheap amount left comparably with Francisco Lindor.
Right.
It's still a lot of money. I think you have to make a decision on, you know, whose team is this? If you are going to make a move, we would assume that it's going to be Soto's team moving forward. If you do trade Lindor, what is a necessity to get back at that point, both short-term and long-term? And I say that because, Will, we still don't have clear guardrails of what the CBA is going to look like sure. next year and beyond. And that is going to be the real tightrope at this trade deadline. So big names, small names, I think we see more expiring contracts and more controllable assets that are affordable, meaning they're not multi-million dollar, multi-year deals that will go 3, 4, 5 years into what this next CBA may look like. That, I think, allows many of these contenders and even teams that think they're a year or two away to still stay in that comfortable pocket of, we have controllable assets. If there's a salary cap, we don't really hamstring ourselves. The Padres, for instance, would love nothing more to get one of the behemoth contracts off their books if we do have a salary cap. Do you attach one of those to Mason Miller and say, okay, we'll do it, but you got to take one of the big dogs, and you know, maybe that solves at least a short-term and long-term problem all at the same time.
Let's get crazy for a second. I don't think it'll happen. I don't think they probably should do it, but at least I'm having a conversation, a thought, a meeting. Juan Soto will be 28 by the end of the year. At some point, and you know, there's always whispers with some of these players that aren't born in America that maybe they're a little older. Would you think about it? Say, you know what? If we get locked out a year, at some point in 29, 30, he's locked up for so many years, so much money. Let's just see if somebody will take it. Now, I don't know who would take it. If it's not the Yankees, the Dodgers, there's just not that many people fishing in that pond. Is that a conversation that you would think about, or that's just it's too much money and it's unrealistic for a lot of different reasons?
Yeah, the realism of teams in a salary cap world, hypothetically, there's only a handful that would say, not only can we take the average annual value and the total value of the contract, but that would also be a premeditated thought that you don't think you're either getting Tarek Skubal or you're going to look at keeping Juan Soto and build with other pieces. Because let's face it, if Tarek Skubal resets the market, which that seems to be the goal, you're upwards of $400 million for a starting pitcher at this point after a couple of arm injuries. All right, you know, where do you want to roll the dice? Would you rather roll it on a position player who's going to play, you would hope, for the next 6 years, upwards of 140 to 150 games for you, and look at the return on investment with that, or run the risk of one more pitch and you're on the hook guaranteed money with a salary cap of a Tarek Skubal. So that is a real, real tough decision to make. And that's why Steve Cohen makes the big money, is to figure out what he feels is more applicable for their short and long-term needs. But I do like your creativity. And I think there's only probably three teams that could, with all intents and purposes, look at a Juan Soto acquisition. We know it'd be the Dodgers, because if you think about some of the guys that are older and are probably coming off the books here, at least for the majority of salary, not the deferred numbers, they would be a destination that thinks they could probably make it work. You stand pat with New York. I don't think the Yankees are going to go back to Juan Soto anytime soon. And then kind of looking, you know, maybe creatively at another big market team out west, but I don't see it happening anytime soon.
Yeah, and the thought process would be, you know what? We always knew when we signed Soto this contract, and it's like all these big long-term contracts. The first half is good. Hope you win. Hope you strike while the iron's hot. And the second half is anywhere from bad to an absolute nightmare. And you know what? We're already through 2 years of this, and we're not getting anywhere. Maybe you just get out too early before too soon. But Cohen's got plenty of money. He's still a great player. So for a lot of reasons, it's obviously unlikely. What if you had to make one bet right now, baseball related, future to win the title, an award, a win total? I'll give you the floor. Before I give you the floor, I'll give you a second to think about it. I sent this to you last night. Man, if you just look at, and I've been using these three teams the last couple of weeks, just because I think the AL at the top is very flawed with the Yankees, the Mariners, even the Rays. Teams like the Red Sox, and they were 25-1 a week or so ago. That number is obviously plummeting. We'll get to them in a second. Red Sox, Tigers, Orioles to meet in the ALCS, you know, 80-1, 200-1. You know what? Throw a few bucks on that. There's a chance you get craziness and the bracket breaks wide open in the American League. So I think you can take some long shots in the American League, but I'll give you the floor. If you had to bet anything right now, baseball related, what would it be?
Yeah. The Brewers with the Mizorowski workload in the second half is something I'm going to keep a very keen eye on. And I know that we had talked on By the Books, and maybe you and Dave and I had a conversation about Wheeler in the Cy Young market, upwards of 30-1. I think he's down to 10-1 now, and we'll kind of see where the prevailing sentiment goes. If Mizorowski's going to have his workload limited, which it looks like the Brewers want to do because they feel they're going to go deep into the postseason, then that's an interesting market if you wanted to get a little different. Even Christopher Sanchez, I still think, is viable at plus 650. His wins above replacement on the pitching side, a lot of the analytical numbers are still really good, and he's earned that right to be that second betting choice right now. I look in the American League, and I am keen to where you are on the Red Sox and the Tigers. And let's assume for a moment that we're 2 weeks from now. I don't think Craig Breslow can sell unless they lose every single game between now and then. And then it's a pretty easy argument. Well, we had a great run, but then it all fell apart. We thought the Boston Tea Party was consequential in American history. Think about selling at this deadline after what you've just done for the Red Sox. I think they buy now. I think they hold on to Chapman and Sonny Gray. I think the Tigers, in my heart of hearts, feel like they were going to go for it. If you didn't feel you were viable, even with Framber Valdez, once Tarek Skubal got hurt, then I think you would have found an exit strategy. That doesn't seem to be the case. And all of a sudden, the Tigers are swinging the bat the way they thought they would at the beginning of the year. So if I were to add a future, and knowing what my portfolio selfishly already is, I have the World Series and men's basketball champion parlay with Michigan and Detroit. So that's a 61-1 future, a World Series ticket now that I have with Detroit. I have two preseason wagers on the Rangers and the Orioles at both 30-1 to win the World Series. So my Orioles one is out. The only other thing I would do is look at adding a Red Sox at 10-1 in the American League pennant race. And I might even want to get a little creative, Will, and cross-board parlay that to drive the odds north of 20-1. If they get Crochet back, Suarez is back, that's as deep a rotation outside of when the Mariners are healthy and the Yankees are. So, you know, and I know great pitching and strikeout pitching wins in October. And all of a sudden, if the Red Sox hit homers, they're a pretty viable candidate come October.
National League MVP. Usually when this comes up and somebody suggests somebody other than Ohtani, said, you know what, you're wasting money. We do this every year. We try to be contrarian. We try to look for these plus numbers. And you know what? Ohtani wins and he wins going away. That being said, I don't know when he's going to pitch again. 0-for-4 on Monday night. He looked really, and I meant to mention this when I was on, yeah. I was on with you guys Monday morning. His swings on Sunday night, the second half of the second game of the doubleheader against the Yankees, man, he's just reaching for the ball. He's just waving at it. His at-bats didn't look good. Is there a path here? Ohtani is minus 600. The field is plus 400. If you want to try and pick who's going to win, Crow Armstrong plus 400, everyone else 30-1 or longer, starting with Schwarber. Soto's not going to win at 40-1, I don't think, despite how great he's been. It'd be hard to see him winning on that team. Woods 50-1. You tell me, is there a bet to be made here? What do you think about Ohtani and his status right now?
Boy, James Wood is probably going to have 100 runs scored before we get to August, and that is insanity. Considering that no one in their right mind was going to have the Nationals as the top scoring offense in Major League Baseball. I do have some intrigue on any other player, but Ohtani, what'd you say? Is that 4-1? I believe it kind of right around where PCA is.
The field is plus 400.
Okay. And PCA.
Which if you're going to take Crow Armstrong, you just take the field at plus 400. I mean, exactly. It makes no sense to take Crow Armstrong.
So what I would do then is I'd probably, because I think the only other guy that can win it single-handedly with the year that he's put up would be probably James Wood. And I would say that if, again, the Nationals, the longer they stay in the wild card race, the better the narrative gets, because it would be him, you know, helping lead this team. And that's also if they don't sell CJ Abrams. I hope that they keep a hold of him, because that's a well-oiled machine the way they're going right now. I would say that I would take like a unit and do three quarters of that unit on anyone but Ohtani. And I'd take the quarter and put it on Wood at the long number. I mean, thinking about where he's at, Will, you know, entering play on Tuesday, 28 homers, 93 runs scored, 66 ribbies. And you're on a Washington National team that occupies at least an opportunity to be in the playoffs with a couple of games here. So it is unique in our situation that if it's a sustained injury issue on the mound, and if they have to you know, basically load manage Ohtani in the designated hitter's role, that certainly cracks the door for some of the other guys to possibly really punch through.
What do you think they do with Ohtani? Doesn't sound like he's going to pitch for a while now. Do you get to the point where you shelf him for a couple weeks? It'll be interesting how, if the voters, if he misses a couple weeks, and we're projecting, obviously, but he doesn't pitch. He stops pitching for a while. You still have a half a season of pretty good pitching, not great, but still pretty good in what he does on offense. But then if he misses time, he's won the award so many times. I wonder if there's an appetite to give it to somebody else. What do you think the Dodgers' plan, though, is with Ohtani here in the near future?
I think now that I think Ohtani has resigned himself to the fact that he now knows he can't win the Cy Young. I think also the Dodgers, we just are a year removed from them getting everyone healthy in the rotation in September. And remember the onboarding of Ohtani, you know, he'd throw an inning and then he'd throw two innings and they'd work him back. Oh, I could see a world on the pitching side where they could do that. Much more to your point, though, on what do you do from a DH standpoint? It feels like if it's just managing the inflammation, then they probably pick their spots maybe a day a week. But he is trailing decently, at least as far as home runs go and RBI. And you wonder, again, I'll go back to the James Wood long shot. And also, you know, if the Cubs continue to really find their way through here, I think those are the only two guys that I would really feel good about investing in. Is you need a narrative. You need a story. PCA all the way around, as far as offensive wins above replacement, no one is even close to him. He's at 5.9 entering Tuesday. And the next closest guy is Otto Lopez. As far as offensive wins above replacement, he's 1.6 behind. I mean, that is insanity. And 1.7 ahead of James Wood. So those are the only two other guys from an all-around game standpoint where they can really stuff the box score in so many different ways. Also with an eye on what do MVP voters look for. Those feel like the two viable guys if you're going to get off of Ohtani, but I would still go with you in that market. Any other player at 4-1, since that's where PCA is, so you get a 2-for-1 right there at a three-quarter unit, and I'd take the quarter and hope that James Wood continues to light the world on fire.
All right, last couple. The Red Sox won, I think, a million games in a row, thereabouts. We always say this about baseball. It's a long season. To be double-digit games under 500 and where they are now, it's just incredible. Did you see this coming? What's the hottest team you've ever been on? And how does this happen? How does a team go from being so bad to basically unbeatable?
Yeah, good trivia question for you. So I was responsible for the 10th consecutive loss one year with the Indians. It was a walk-off home run by Miguel Cabrera at Comerica Park. And I think the day or two after that, we started a 10-game win streak, and I was the winning pitcher for win number 10. So I've been on both ends of the spectrum as far as the playing side goes. I was broadcasting with the Indians on the pre and post game show in 2017 when set the new American League record for 22 consecutive wins. And I got to tell you, Will, when you get to 10, you're like, oh, this is really good. Then we got to 15 and you're like, well, you got every national writer, you got all kinds of media that all of a sudden are coming to the stadium. We got to 18, 19, we hit 20 to tie the Athletics. And then we were like, this is surreal. And it's all the different ways. Like, Will, you think even the Monday night game for the Orioles and the Red Sox, okay, here we go. You know, even with the four errors, Baltimore's gonna find enough to be able to do it. And then Caleb Durbin hits the home run. Such a Fenway Park home run. There in the eighth inning, and Chapman even had to wriggle out of a little bit of tension there in the ninth inning. So when you start to see those little breaks go your way, you know it's something special. But the middle of their order is starting to swing it the way that I think they envision. And think about this, Will, still no Roman Anthony. And, you know, for Trevor Story and even for Marcelo Mayer. Crochet on the mound. They just got Suarez back. Back into their bullpen is about as automatic as it gets right now with Chapman, Whitlock, and Slayton. So it's a fun thing to be a part of. And it's you come to the park every day thinking, like, we're going to win. I just don't know how we're going to win. And that is such a unique thing to be a part of.
Yeah, and a couple things on that. Well, first off, O'Neill smoked that ball with two on, a former Red Sox. He absolutely crushed that ball. And then the batter before, hit the ball off the wall.
Yes.
With a man on first and two out. And I'm thinking maybe you take a chance, maybe you send him. And Duran actually threw to second, which I didn't see where the runner who ended up on third was at the time. Maybe there was that was the right play. But, man, that was kind of gutsy throwing the ball to second there. With a man on first, two outs, he's going on the swing, going on the crack of the bat to have a double off the monster. And I know it got a pretty friendly hop, but I don't know. Was that the right play to throw it to second? That, to me, seemed like a risky play.
Yeah, for people that have not kind of sat there on that side of the field, that fence feels so much closer than what it looks like on TV. So in real time, and your third base coach is sitting there and kind of judging, you know, again, if you're going to get thrown out at home, you know, that you want to give as optimal a chance for your runner to score that tying run and kind of knowing where you are, especially in the batting order there. So you're so right about O'Neill, though. I thought that was ticketed for the game tying hit there, but there again, when you have these kind of win streaks, you're in the right spot at the right time. That's where the Sox have been here the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and I think if the third base coach, and I would love to see the side-by-side of where the ball was. And I think the third base coach probably held him thinking, all right, it was hit short. I'm going to hold him here because the throw's coming to home. If you knew the throw was going to second, you might have had a chance to score. But Jensen, I appreciate it, man. VEASAN by the books. Let everyone know where else we can find you, and I appreciate you coming on.
You got it. 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern every weekday. Follow me on X at JLew50. That's JLewFifty. Sprint to the finish, my friend. Going to be a lot of fun in this second half.
All right, that'll do it. Rate, review, subscribe. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you to Jensen Lewis for hopping on. We'll be back Friday. See you then.